Phil, if we look at just numbers, if we look at the January jobs report, we look at inflation cooling off a bit, we look at the stock market on about a 4-month run up here, it would appear the economy is doing well, yet poll after poll shows the American public just doesn't seem to be feeling it. Why is that?
Well, I think the most fundamental reason that most people don't feel good about the economy is that wages have still not caught up with prices, which is to say the cost of living has gone up much more than people's ability to pay that cost. And therefore, they're behind from a standard of living standpoint where they were a few years ago. And people don't expect to be behind where they were a few years ago. They expect it to rise. They expect each year to be a little bit better than the last year in terms of how far their wages go, how much they can buy with what they earn. And so we have seen inflation come down from those huge high peaks that we had, but the prices are still elevated because, of course, inflation is cumulative. And until what people are making not only catches up to that, but exceeds it so that they feel like they're getting ahead again, people are not going to feel good economically. And I think that's Biden's most fundamental political problem, is that what people are experiencing in their household budgets, paying for the groceries, paying for the other things that they need, they don't feel that they're getting ahead. They still feel that they're behind. And that's why there's so much pessimism still.
If you look at what caused that run-up in inflation we had, and it was, what, roughly cumulative 17-19% over the first 3 years of the Biden administration here, Phil, one of the things that fueled that rapid rise in inflation was excessive spending at the federal level. Congress right now is considering yet another massive spending bill, sort of cleverly called a border security bill. Is this something that you see might just add more fuel to the inflation fire?
Yeah, well, that's of course the big driver of inflation, and I think that we had about $6 trillion in excess spending, additional spending above the normal federal spending as a response to COVID and the lockdowns and sort of all of those related policies. And there's no question that about 90% of that was financed by Federal Reserve money printing, which is why we had all of that inflationary episode that we had, and then largely receded. But then under Biden, it started accelerating again, and we have significant upward pressure on federal spending again. And we're going to pay for that. We will inevitably pay for it one way or another. Either there are going to be significant increases in taxes to pay for that, and of course that has economic harm associated with it, or more likely, because this is what politicians have come to prefer over the obvious hit of raising taxes, it will be monetized and we'll get another bout of inflation. It's interesting. If you look historically at what happened in the 70s, it was not just one big run-up of inflation. If you look at the chart, it was a big run-up, and then it came all the way down, and then it went back up even higher than it did the first time. And I do worry that we could be headed for a repeat of that, that this could just be a lull before another very large inflationary episode, because there's really no restraint on federal spending. You know, the fiscal year that just ended this past September, fiscal year 2023, spending was $1 trillion higher than it was projected to be for that year just a couple of years ago. The last projection under the Trump administration had $1 trillion lower. Then you got a Speaker of the House who says, oh, I've greatly improved upon Kevin McCarthy's spending deal because I've cut the top line spending number by $16 billion. And you look at this and you scratch your head and you kind of say, okay, well, I mean, $16 billion is not chump change. It's better than nothing. But spending's $1 trillion higher than it was supposed to be, and you're fighting over $16 billion, and the Democrats are howling that that's too much to cut. And, you know, it's just, it feels like you're arguing over crumbs after you just ate a gigantic cake. I mean, just it's the scope and scale of the fight that they're having right now is nothing compared to the run-up in spending that we've seen. And, of course, you look at the projections going forward under Biden policies, and it looks to me like that one-time episode that we had with all of that special one-time spending under COVID, he wants to be normal. He wants that to be kind of just the level of deficits that we're funding through Federal Reserve money printing on a normal ongoing annual basis, which would mean that we permanently have 8, 9, 10% inflation, not just as a one-time episode to get through, but just sort of as the cost of financing federal spending. And so I am very concerned that that could be where we're headed.
Speaking of the cost of financing federal spending, the Federal Reserve here, Phil, has over the past year or so, maybe a little bit longer, been steadily raising interest rates in order to cool off the economy to combat inflation. Seems to be having some effect. And they're now talking about maybe some cuts here as we go through the year. But we have these higher interest rates. This, of course, affects families. If you want to get a mortgage, buy a car, whatever. Does it not also have an impact on the federal budget? You have these trillions upon trillions of dollars of debt. Don't we have to pay interest on that debt?
Yeah, interest expense has risen very rapidly with the higher interest rates, and interest expense is now the number one element of the federal budget, larger than the defense budget, and it's going to be around $1 trillion for this year in interest expense. And so that certainly does, it certainly has an effect on federal finances, on household finances. It depends. If you're a saver, you love it because you're finally getting some money on your savings for the first time in quite a long time. Of course, if you're buying a house, you hate it. And we've seen home purchases really crater, really. I mean, just historically low levels for the simple reason that everyone who's in a home and has, you know, a 2.5% or 3% mortgage, you know, they don't want to give that up and go buy a new house at 7%. And the people who are looking, therefore, they've got less purchasing power because of the interest rates, but there's a lot less inventory. So prices haven't come down to adjust for the higher financing costs. And so the housing market is in very weak shape. And of course, housing is a major sector of the economy. So that is another reason, I think, that there's sort of a sense of pessimism economically. But from the government finance perspective, yeah, it puts a big strain on the federal budget. And of course, the question is, do you just pay for the interest on the debt by running up more debt? And at what point do you not have real purchasers for that debt? And it ends up being the Fed that buys it and you monetize it and you have another round of inflation as a consequence. So it plays into the same thing we were just talking about federal spending being on an unsustainable path that's probably going to lead to monetization, another round of inflation. One of the components of that is paying all that interest.
So taking all of this and putting it together, I always like to ask folks on this show to look into your crystal ball. And of course, none of us have a crystal ball that's crystal clear. But the Fed, of course, wanting to bring us to a so-called soft landing with their interest rate strategy. Do you see us headed for a soft landing or do you see choppy waters ahead?
I'm cynical enough to predict that because Biden will keep Jay Powell in his job, and President Trump has already said he will fire him, that we have a Fed that is very politically interested this year. And therefore, I think that we will start to see a rate-cutting cycle within their next meeting or two. And the idea behind that will be to juice up the stock market, to juice up the economy, to make people maybe some of these mortgages that people got over the last year or two, they can get some refis, get some relief on that, feel better, get some optimism, get Biden reelected. And then, of course, when the consequence of those policies is that inflation reignites, it'll be after the election. And so we'll pay for it not until after the election. So that is my concern. If I were running the Fed, I would stay firm on interest rates, probably for all or most of the year, and kind of allow that the readjustment to work itself through. But I do think that we're going to see cuts, and there will be short-term positives as a consequence of that. But I worry about kind of the medium and longer-term consequences of moving to a looser monetary policy while we continue to have large fiscal deficits.
Phil Kirpin is president of American Commitment. And Phil, tell us a little bit about American Commitment. Also, where can folks find you on the web?
We're a national free market advocacy group. We try to work on all the fiscal, economic, and regulatory issues where a little bit more citizen education and engagement might make the difference. So we've got lots of model letters into regulatory agencies or into Congress weighing in on particular issues where we think it might help to have people writing in. And if people want to read any of our stuff or check out the actions in our Action Center, everything's on AmericanCommitment.org.
Phil Kirpin of American Commitment. Phil, thank you for being back with us.
All right, Loman, have a good one.